With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, like, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick. that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Darkcast Network. The light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
As terrifying as the thought is, small children go missing all the time. But in most cases, they're quickly recovered. Kids can wander off. There can be miscommunications about where they're supposed to be. These issues are resolved and everyone goes on living their lives, just hugging their kids a little tighter. But sometimes, these cases that seem as though they'll come to a swift resolution don't. Such is the case of 4-year-old Cody Bixby. Cody was reported missing on January 31st, 2022, when his father said he woke up and found his son's bed empty. A search immediately ensued, and police took Cody's father, Corey, down to the station for questioning. This interview turned into a brutal interrogation that spanned days and led to Corey being arrested on multiple charges. Are police correct in thinking that Corey had something to do with his son's disappearance? Or has tunnel vision led to a terrified father being left in jail, unable to search for his son who has yet to be found? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Cody Bixby. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Though this is the second one in a row, I swear we're not only going to cover Virginia cases this season, but the 1-year anniversary of Cody's disappearance recently passed, so I wanted to cover the case in order to bring some renewed attention to it. I've been following this one since the beginning, but kept on thinking he was going to be found. So I held off. But a year later, Corey Bixby is still in jail, and there have been few clues as to Cody's whereabouts.
That's a terrifying thought, too. Being a father stuck in jail, if he is, in fact, innocent.
Yeah.
Like, not able to do anything to help search for his son. Like, that's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about what he was charged with, you know, the whole investigation, obviously. And it's interesting because this case is, on the surface, very similar to other ones that we've covered. I'm thinking Oakley Carlson and Orrin and Orson West, you know, particularly. But there are definitely some differences. So we're going to get into all of that. But before we get started, we have a few announcements to make. So the book is actually, as you're listening to this, now available. You can buy And Then They Were Gone, True Stories of Those Who Went Missing and Never Came Home on Amazon.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yes, it is a Kindle book, and it's free if you have a Kindle Unlimited subscription. If you are a Patreon member at any level, we will also give you a free copy. I'm just kind of still working on the logistics of that, but that'll happen here in the next couple of days. So if you'd like to actually physically buy a copy or use your Kindle Unlimited subscription, you can search for And Then They Were Gone or just search for my name, which is very easy to search for because I am the only Kona Gallagher anywhere. So just look for that and you'll find it. But we'll also put the direct link into our show notes. So, yeah, that is there.
Congratulations, babe.
Thank you. I was so busy with my actual job today that I literally haven't posted about it. So, like, this is, the night we're recording this is actually the day the book officially came out. And I have told literally nobody because it's been such a hectic day with my actual day job. So, anyway, you all, even though you're hearing this in the future, are kind of hearing it first. So yes, if you would like to get it, please do. And if you would like to leave a review, I would greatly appreciate it. Speaking of Patreon, we have some new folks who have joined us over there. So before we get started, we'd like to give them a huge shout out. So thank you to Aaron G, Heather B, Denise W, Alicia B, Pam A, Jordan S, Allison L, and Carrie C. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
So now that that's all out of the way, let's get into the story of Cody Bigsby. Cody Bigsby was born on January 12, 2018 to Corey Bigsby. Cody's mother's name has not been made public for reasons we'll discuss later. Cody has 7 siblings, including half-siblings. But at the time of his disappearance, he lived with his father, Corey, and his 3 brothers, a 5-year-old and 2-year-old twins, at the Buckrow Point Townhomes in Hampton, Virginia. So Cody was 4, he had a brother who was 5, and then 2-year-old twins.
That is a lot for one house.
Yeah, exactly. And a single dad. So we'll get a little bit into the circumstances around their breakup, but I don't really have a lot of information on the family dynamics after they split. Meaning, I know that Corey had custody of the kids and they all lived with him full time. But I don't know how much their mother was around or is around currently. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. From what I've been able to piece together, Corey was married to a woman who is not Cody's mother before. So he was married for quite some time to this other woman, and they had 4 children before divorcing. Corey was in the Army from 1997 to 2017 and worked as a cargo specialist, achieving the rank of sergeant. He completed 2 deployments to Afghanistan and 2 to Iraq before retiring on disability. It appears as though he was stationed at Fort Campbell, as he and his first wife owned a home in neighboring Oak Grove, Kentucky, back around 2006. I'm not sure when Corey and his first wife split, or actually even if they ever got officially divorced, because later she was referred to as his estranged wife. But in any case, he eventually entered a new relationship and had 4 more children, including Cody.
Okay, so this guy has 8 kids?
8 kids, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I don't know the ages of the older 4 kids, because again, they're not germane to this case. So like, obviously people are trying to keep their privacy as much as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, so 4 older kids and then the 4 who lived with Corey. On July 23rd, 2018, Corey was arrested for assault and battery on a family member. The complainant was his partner and she was pregnant with Cody at the time. But the case was dropped in December of that year because she refused to continue to cooperate.
Yeah, as is usually the case in an abusive relationship.
Yeah, I mean, you see that a lot in domestic violence cases. And obviously, we don't have any more details beyond that. So we have to kind of, you know, these are all just assumptions. But yes, there was a charge that, you know, the case was eventually dropped. Now, just a few months later, though, because that case was dropped in December, on February 9th of 2019, Corey was arrested again for the same offense, but that has weirdly never been reported in any of the news stories. So all of the news stories that I was able to find, a lot of them do mention this 2018 incident and said from the arrest record that it was between Corey and Cody's mother. She was pregnant with Cody at the time. She said that he, during an argument, he threatened to kill her. She grabbed a knife in order to defend herself, and he punched and bit her. So that was her story from the 2018 incident. I've not been able to find a single news source that talks about the 2019 incident. But when I looked at his court records, it's there. And it's not just like a different hearing for the same incident. I mean, though, there are two different offense dates. Huh. But this case was also dropped the next month. So that was dropped in March of 2019. The couple must have stayed together, though, because they have those twins. And so those twins would have been born around 2019 or early 2020. So after the twins were born, they soon split. And as I mentioned, Corey retained custody of those four children while their mother moved to Washington, D.C., which is what, D.C. to Hampton is probably like 4 or 5 hours, right?
Yeah, I guess it'd probably be about that.
Yeah, like it's a solid drive regardless, but not, you know, across the country or anything like that. Now, even though Corey did have these two assault charges, he wasn't convicted in either one, so he didn't have a criminal record at all. The only other court case I was able to find, court cases, I should say, involved speeding, like dude liked to drive fast and, you know, driving on a suspended license, failure to obey highway signs, like all of that kind of stuff.
The usual stupid shit.
Exactly. And it was a bunch of it, but like, that's all it was, you know. According to address records, Corey moved into the Hampton townhome on Ranelet Drive in early 2020. And after that, things remained pretty quiet. So it seems as though, like, early 2020, my guess is that's when he and Cody's mom split. Because, you know, it seems like the twins were born. They moved. Like, maybe this was his kind of post-divorce home
or post split, because we're not sure that they were ever actually married.
Yeah, exactly. Because in Virginia, marriages are not public record until either 20 or 25 years. So I don't know.
So nobody knows that we're married.
Yeah, that's true. I've told you that when I looked up, when I did our background checks, like we are like possible associates with each other, but like we don't show up as married.
Interesting.
Between 2020 and January 31st, 2022, the Bigsby's lives were pretty uneventful. There were no arrests and no reports of any disturbances or anything of that nature that I could find or that's been reported on. The development where the family lived, Buckrow Point, looks pretty nice from the photos online. So they're older 1, 2, and 3 bedroom townhome style apartments. So they're like the kind that's like really ugly on the outside, but nice and like updated and well-maintained on the inside. So I looked at their website and looked at the floor plans and everything, and they're nice places. They have like this amazing clubhouse, like a really good clubhouse that has like a kids play area, an office, and a fitness center. And so, yeah, it just seems like a really perfectly nice place for a father and his kids to go after a split while they're trying to figure out their next move. What I don't understand is why they were living there when Cody went missing on January 31st, 2022. According to property records, Corey Bigsby purchased a home about 6 miles away. Now, this home was larger, just under 1,600 square feet, about 500 square feet more than the largest model at Buckrow Point. It also has 4 bedrooms, 2 baths, a big backyard, and it's close to the water. Like, it seems like a just generally an upgrade.
Yeah, sounds like a great place to have kids.
Exactly, right? I mean, you have 4 kids, it's a 4-bedroom place, like, perfect. Corey went under contract on the home on November 30th of 2021. He was in escrow for just under 45 days and closed on the home on January 12th, 2022, just over 2 weeks prior to Cody's reported disappearance. So to be clear, this means that Corey was the official owner of this new home beginning on January 12th. So why were they still in this rental weeks later?
I mean, maybe their lease wasn't up.
Yeah, but that's no reason. You have to pay either way, but that's no reason not to move into the new place.
Maybe there was some work that needed to be done on the house before they moved in. I mean, that.
Well, okay, yes.
Kind of a trivial point, right?
Maybe, but maybe not. Because, I mean, just as we saw in Orrin and Orson Welles' case, their parents had also just bought a home around the time of their disappearance. And there's a question of where Orin and Orson were living, where they had been, where the other kids were. And so, yeah, it could be completely irrelevant, but it might not be. And the only reason I bring it up is because, yes, that was my first thought as well, that maybe he was doing work on the house and so they didn't move in. And if you look at the photos online, they're like aerial photos. If you look at the tax records, it's a brick house. And at some point between January of 2022 and April of 2022, the house was painted. Like it, you know, the sidewalk was redone. It was just kind of spruced up on the outside. Of course, I have no idea what was done on the inside. But what I will say is that from what I was able to find, it does seem as though Corey got a VA loan. And you generally don't get a VA loan if the house is not habitable. Like, you can't get a VA loan for like some fixer-upper if you're going to use it as your primary residence. It has to be kind of ready to go and ready to move into. I don't want to get like too into the real estate aspect of this, but given the fact that he seemingly used a VA loan, like, it doesn't seem that that was like fixing it up was the reason they weren't moving in. So I don't know if there was a reason that's important, but I do find it interesting.
I mean, he's a single father. He has a job, right?
No. So he is medically retired from the Army as of 2017, and there are no job records for him after that.
All right. Well, I was going to say maybe he was busy, but I mean, busy with the kids, obviously.
Well, yeah, busy with the kids, obviously. But I mean, listen, we've got three kids and we lived in a tiny place and we moved into the larger place the second we closed on it. Like, we did not wait a day. We were here the day of closing because we needed to get out of that space with the kids.
Fond memories of that day.
But anyway, let's fast forward to Monday, January 31st. Corey says that he checked in on Cody around 2 a.m. and the little boy was asleep in his bed. When Corey woke up in the morning, like around 8:30-ish, he said that Cody was gone. He searched for his son, but when he couldn't locate him, he called 911 at approximately 9:06 a.m. Thankfully, police responded quickly and began a search. When the boy wasn't located, they called in reinforcements. Both the FBI and the Virginia Department of Emergency Management assisted in a grid search of the area. Hampton Fire also assisted, and helicopters and drones were deployed like that morning/afternoon.
That is a robust response.
It really, really was. I mean, they took this very seriously from the beginning. And I think it's one of the things where, like, based on Corey's story, the most likely explanation was that Cody had somehow wandered off, which happens.
Yeah. I mean, still also terrifying.
Yeah, obviously. But if he had wandered off, like, it would stand to reason that you would find him relatively quickly because a 4-year-old can only go so far.
Right.
And so when they didn't, that's when they're like, okay, let's bring everybody in. But I found it so interesting and impressive that the FBI got involved on day one. Like, that's, I feel like, not something that we see all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I could think of is that, I mean, Quantico's relatively close.
I was on the Web Sleuths forum, and somebody did kind of bring that up. They're like, yeah, Virginia typically has a pretty good relationship with the FBI because yeah, they're, like, right here.
That's true.
So yeah, that you do see them more in Virginia cases than you do in others.
Quantico to Hampton, that's probably, like, 2 hours.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of anecdotal, but, like, you know, maybe. Cody was reported to have been wearing all black with Spider-Man flip-flops.
Okay, hang on. His description had shoes in it, but he was in bed.
Yes.
The last time he was seen.
Yeah.
Were the flip-flops also missing from
the
house?
That's the thing. And this is a weird detail, and it's something that struck me immediately. And one of the things I love about going through the Web Sleuths forums is seeing people's reactions in real time. And that struck a lot of people. Like,
why would you include that in the description of what he was wearing if the last time he was seen, he was asleep? And so, I mean, that to me says that his flip-flops were missing.
Right. So, yeah, it could mean that Corey or someone else realized the shoes were missing, like you said, not that they necessarily saw Cody wearing them.
Right.
But, you know, they were missing when, like, the next day, and they put two and two together. But that is an interesting detail to consider, because if Cody did decide to wander off for some reason, it would make sense that he would have put his shoes on. And flip-flops, yes, it's January 31st and it's cold, but, yeah, but like,
he's a 4-year-old kid and he's just looking for something quick to put on.
Yeah, like him putting on flip-flops makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
But if someone came and abducted him in the middle of the night, to me, it's unlikely that they would take the time to put shoes on the child.
Yes.
Especially since those flip-flops were likely jumbled up with shoes belonging to three other little boys.
Right.
So, like, how, if you're just some random abductor who decides to take this one child out of four, like, and you're also going to find the flip-flops that belong to him and take the time to put them on?
That just doesn't make sense for it to be like a rando.
Right.
Coming into the house and targeting one.
Mm-hmm.
You said his older brother was five?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why just take the four-year-old?
Yeah. Though several agencies were assisting in the search and local media was on the scene, an Amber Alert was not issued for Cody.
Because there's no evidence of an abduction.
Correct. Yeah. Virginia is one of the states that requires a belief by law enforcement that the child is in imminent danger of serious bodily injury or death, and that there is descriptive information about the child and their, you know, abductor. So what they really want is a license plate number or some other description of the person who they believe took the child. So, you know, there wasn't any evidence that anyone took Cody in particular. So an Amber Alert was not put out. Part of the reason, though, that the police didn't think they had enough evidence that Cody had been abducted could be because they were already starting to set their sights on Corey. At 4 p.m. on January 31st, Hampton Police Chief Mark Talbot gave a press conference urging the public to keep an eye out for Cody and to look through any camera footage that they may have if they live nearby. So, you know, they wanted anybody who had a doorbell camera, any other sort of security system in the area to go through their footage and see if they saw anything. Chief Talbot also told reporters that there were concerns that Cody may not have gone missing when his father said he had. And I find that really interesting because this is the afternoon that Cody went missing. Like, this is the same day.
Right. Yeah. What evidence would they have to lead them to believe that Corey was lying?
Well, I mean, obviously, he doesn't specifically say, but when reporter Brett Hall asked if there was reason to believe that Cody was in danger, Chief Talbot responded, quote, "They really want to find him," end quote. However, he also stated that both Corey and Cody's mother were cooperating with police and answering questions. At this point, it seems as though they had only spoken to Cody's mother by phone because she no longer lived in the area. Reporters also asked if there were signs of foul play at the home, but Chief Talbot said he could not comment on that. By 11 p.m. that night, WAVY.com reported that their reporters on the scene saw forensic units searching dumpsters around the apartment complex where the Bixbys lived. Concern was, of course, growing as no trace of the four-year-old had been found and temperatures were quickly dropping into the 30s. The next day, February 1st, searches resumed and Cody's mom came into town to speak with police in person. Chief Talbot held another press conference and doubled down on the suspicions that he had, saying that the evidence they had left them with serious doubt about Corey's story about when Cody was last seen. He then asked the public to look at footage from Sunday, January 30th, which was the day before Cody was reported missing. When asked if they had a person of interest in Cody's disappearance, Chief Talbot replied, quote, "There is a person of interest. We are most interested in Cody's parents," end quote. And again, now we're talking about the next day. This is about 30 hours after Cody was reported missing.
Yeah, that's really fast to jump to targeting one person or the parents in general. But we don't know what evidence there was. We don't know what Corey's statement was. So
here we're talking day one. This chief is coming out against the father who reported him missing. Chief Talbot at the press conference also had the following exchange with the reporter. So the reporter said, "Have the parents not told you enough to connect the dots on the stories that are not adding up with the evidence that there is?" Chief said, "We probably won't know for certain how much is being left out until we find this child." The reporter said, "But isn't that really the concerning thing, that the parents, the people that were responsible for his safety, are telling you stories that are not adding up to the evidence that you have?" And the chief said, "That is the crux of the investigation. We have to figure that out." On February 1st, other members of the Bigsby family came down to help. Corey's sister was interviewed by a WAVY reporter in front of the apartment. She said that she didn't believe for a second that her brother had hurt Cody or that he would hurt any of his children. Police held another press conference on February 2nd where they addressed the person of interest issue. Chief Talbot said, quote, "I'm going to provide some clarification on the person of interest in this case. The person of interest in this case is Cody's father. His name is Corey Bigsby. He is a 43-year-old Hampton man," end quote. And, you know, this clarification is important because he's saying very explicitly that Cody's father is the person of interest. And it's seemingly removing Cody's mother from being a person of interest. Though Talbot does clarify that no one has been 100% ruled out. But obviously, the focus is very much on Corey and not Cody's mother or anyone else.
It would be easy to rule out his mother if she lived in D.C. and there was some way to verify that she was in D.C.
Right.
Yeah, again, it's like singularity of focus.
And speaking of which, here's where things start to get weird. So remember, I said at the beginning that on January 31st, the day Cody went missing, Corey went down to the police station to answer some questions. Chief Talbot also said this about Corey's whereabouts, quote, "Corey is still with us at police headquarters. He is there voluntarily and he is choosing to answer our questions," end quote. To be clear, he said this on February 2nd, 3 days after Corey went to the police station to answer questions.
I don't understand. I mean, like, has he left and come back?
No.
So he's been at the police station for 3 days.
Correct.
Supposedly, quote unquote, voluntarily.
Yes.
Okay.
Choosing to answer our questions.
Okay.
For 3 days.
So who's watching the other kids?
So they don't say specifically, but the reporters did ask that because apparently initially on the 31st, when Corey went to the police station, like, he took the other kids with him, and Chief Talbot did say that the kids were safe and, you know, away and being taken care of, but they didn't, but he didn't say specifically where.
I mean, like, are they just like having a sleepover in the police roll call room? Like, what's going on?
I don't think so. I mean, it does seem as though Corey has like a lot of family. So my guess is they were put with relatives. And what I will say is that like Corey's family does kind of factor into this a bit more as we go on. And they're never like, hey, and also, what did you do with the other three kids? So I'm assuming that one of them has the children. So on February 3rd, police were expanding their pleas for witnesses. Instead of just asking if anyone had seen Cody on Sunday, January 30th, they started asking if anyone had seen Cody since Christmas.
Okay, so now the police are assuming, or maybe not assuming, that's probably not the right word, but they're thinking Corey's story is complete BS, and they're expanding the time frame because of the last time he was seen by somebody other than his father.
Correct. Yeah. So it wasn't clear whether people had, you know, other witnesses other than his father had seen Cody on Christmas, or if there were photos of Cody on Christmas, you know, with other people in them. It was something along those lines, though. So they were pretty positive that Cody was, you know, alive and well and accounted for on Christmas. What they couldn't find was any solid evidence of him after that. And again, that could mean nothing. That, like, he was four, it was wintertime. Like, I don't think he was in preschool. Like, he wasn't going outside and playing.
I mean, even if he was in preschool between Christmas and New Year's
Eve, a lot of that's
closed anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, like, the fact that nobody could definitively provide proof that they had seen him after Christmas doesn't necessarily mean that anything nefarious had happened, you know, in that month period, basically. It could, but it's certainly not definitive. What I am wondering, though, is if at any point, probably on that first day, if police talked to the five-year-old, the older brother. And I'm wondering if the reason why this all kind of got going so quickly and so forcefully is because the five-year-old said something, you know, something to the effect of, like, we haven't seen Cody in a long time, or Cody hasn't been here, or, you know, something that made them believe that Cody hadn't gone missing that morning or the night before.
Interesting theory.
Yeah. And the only, you know, the main reason why I think that is because in the Oakley Carlson case, that got blown up because of her older sibling, who was a little bit older. She was like seven, I think. But she's the one, you know, who said, like, Oakley is no more, right. You know, all of that kind of stuff. And that's what led people to realize that Oakley was missing. So I'm wondering if we have perhaps something similar in this situation. Anyway, I mean, this whole thing with them expanding, you know, the timeline to Christmas doesn't look good for Corey Bigsby, but what also doesn't look good is that Hampton police allegedly also did not let him see his lawyer.
Oh, violating his rights, huh?
Yeah, attorney Jeffrey Ambrose was retained to represent Corey Bigsby by Corey's family. On February 3rd, now keep in mind, Corey has been there at the police department since January 31st, Ambrose went to the Hampton Police Division to speak with his client, but was not permitted to see him.
Why?
Because officers told him that Corey was still there voluntarily and had not requested an attorney. Ambrose told reporter Sarah Hammond, quote, "I'm concerned that because he has been there for so long and is not being told about the presence of counsel, that his presence may not be voluntary. We are simply not being given access to him so that we can confirm that." So again, like, he wants to get in and confirm that Corey has not asked for a lawyer. And so he asked detectives to notify Corey that he was there, but they refused to do so, which is shady and shitty, but legal. So again, if what detectives are saying is true and Corey either did not ask for a lawyer or say specifically that he did not want a lawyer, if a lawyer shows up, they don't have to let the lawyer in. Guilty or innocent, I have a hard time imagining anyone being questioned at a police station for 3 days without leaving.
And it being voluntary.
Yeah, and not ever at any point saying, you know, maybe I should talk to a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of strains credulity to me.
Yeah.
But that is what Hampton police was asserting. Now, that same day, February 3rd, Corey Bigsby was arrested. But like we often see in these cases, it wasn't for anything directly related to Cody's disappearance.
Was he arrested from the police station?
Yeah. So what it sounds like, honestly, is that I don't know if he actually got around to filing it or if he just threatened to file it, but my guess would be that Ambrose
either filed or threatened to file a writ of habeas corpus and was like, provide my client or charge him. And so they're like, okay, yeah, no, we'll just charge him.
Right.
So they charged him. Corey Bigsby was arrested on 7 counts of felony child neglect. According to the arrest warrant, quote, Bigsby confessed to leaving the children alone for over 3 hours on December 13th, 2021, so he could go buy a vehicle in Norfolk. The 3 youngest children were left home alone during this transaction. The children were left without a means or ability to communicate emergency services. So what that ending part basically means is that, you know, he doesn't have a landline, which a lot of people don't have. So the kids were not able to call 911. This also means that the 5-year-old was not there. And it's not said where he was, if he was with Corey or somewhere else. But on this day, it was Cody and the 2 twin 2-year-olds who were left home alone. Corey allegedly told detectives that he did this because the 4 children were too much of a burden to take with him when he left the home.
So he left the youngest 3 by themselves?
I guess, like I said, I don't know if he had the 5-year-old with him or not, but yeah. A similar situation also occurred allegedly on January 25th, just under a week before Cody was reported missing. So I don't know the details of like why he left them, but apparently that day he left all 4 of the children alone at home. So that's why there are 7 counts of child neglect. So it was 3 counts because he left the 3 kids the first time, all 4 kids the second time. Jeff Ambrose was finally permitted to meet with his client on February 4th, the day of Corey's arraignment.
Okay, wait. When was the charge of leaving the 4 kids?
January 25th.
Just like 6 days before. Yeah. So by charging him with that, as let's say that's the 7th count, that's acknowledging that he was alive at the time.
Oh, that's interesting. You're right. Yeah, because it can't both be true. It can't be like he disappeared right after Christmas. Yeah, previous to January 25th, if he's also charged with leaving him alone on January 25th. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It seems, honestly, like they were just throwing anything to the wall to see what would stick.
Yeah, sure. But
yeah, no, that's
something
a good point.
In the back of your mind.
So Jeff Ambrose was finally permitted to meet with his client on February 4th, the day of Corey's arraignment. After the meeting, he spoke with reporters and accused the Hampton police of violating his client's constitutional rights. He said that Corey was not actually at police headquarters voluntarily for 4 days.
Weird.
Shocker, right? In fact, he said that Corey asked for an attorney on day 1, but was denied. Chief Talbot denied these accusations at a press conference, stating that Corey was a capable man who had every opportunity to ask for an attorney. He did not make such a request. If he did make that request, we would have honored it. End quote.
Yeah, prove it.
Yeah, well, we're getting there. By February 5th, the command center had been taken down, at the apartment complex, but the community did not give up. Not to say that police did either. They were very much still investigating, but...
Right, but the... Multiple agencies, federal agencies, it starts to get scaled back.
Exactly. Volunteers continued to search for Cody, knocking on doors and hiking through mud and thorns, all in hopes of finding the 4-year-old. The next evening, a candlelight vigil was held next to the Hampton soccer fields. The city of Hampton had kind of adopted Cody, and they were fighting for him. And police also continued to search for evidence. They went back to the apartment and removed several bags filled with evidence. They also stated to reporters that the FBI had provided them with a great deal of forensic evidence for them to sift through. Of course, we don't have, any more specifics.
Right.
Corey Bigsby had a bond hearing on February 8th. His attorney, Jeff Ambrose, pointed to Corey's military record, his clean criminal record, and willingness to adhere to house arrest and electronic monitoring, all as reasons he should be granted bond. Corey's first wife and mother of his four older children also took the stand to advocate for his release on bond. However, the Commonwealth's attorney did bring up that while Bigsby had been honorably discharged from the Army, he had been convicted of going AWOL. Now, I should point out that convicted is the word that the attorney used. So I've read that AWOL is Article 86 of the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and is not as serious as Article 87, which is desertion. So as such, AWOL is usually taken to NJP or non-judicial punishment, meaning that he was not technically convicted as he likely did not receive a court-martial. And that makes sense because this whole AWOL thing really took Corey's lawyer by surprise at the hearing, which is not something that you want to have happen as a defense attorney. But he later told reporters, he's like, you know, I asked him if he had any convictions and he said no. And I just think that he didn't think about that because it wasn't an actual conviction.
Yeah. And I mean, even if it was some sort of conviction, it wasn't a criminal conviction.
Right. And it wasn't even like a court martial, you know, so
right.
It wasn't civil or like military. And, you know, like he said, he was honorably discharged. I mean, that's true regardless. And so, yeah, it was definitely a little bit of an embarrassing moment in court, but it doesn't necessarily say that Corey was lying about anything either. But the Commonwealth's attorney also stated that releasing Corey from jail would give him the opportunity to obstruct law enforcement from finding Cody's body. So those are the two main tenets of the argument against granting him bond, that he is a flight risk because he has this history of going AWOL, and they believed that he would, you know, hide the body better or hinder the investigation in some other way were he to be released. The judge denied bond. Ambrose wasn't done, though. He immediately filed an appeal in hopes of getting a second bond hearing. He was also still going after the police for violating his client's constitutional right to an attorney and said that he was awaiting 72 hours of interrogation footage from Hampton police in addition to other discovery items.
I mean, come on, 72 hours?
Voluntarily.
There's no way that that's voluntary.
Exactly. Yes, 72 hours of footage. And that's not to say that it's all interrogation footage. Because
come on. That's nuts.
Exactly. Ambrose also pointed out after this hearing that even after multiple days of interrogation, Corey never implicated himself in his son's disappearance. And even though he hadn't seen all 72 hours of the video, like, that's pretty evident by the charges that were filed.
Right.
None of which were directly related to Cody's disappearance. Amid the legal wrangling, activists continue to fight for Cody and publicize his case, even getting digital billboards put up. A group of activists even descended on a city council meeting, a fact that I'm mainly only bringing up so that I can share this banger of a quote. So basically, Chief Talbot was defending his department's efforts in the search and started off, and honestly, I wasn't there, but like I was reading this and it sounded a little condescending to me, but he thanked the activists who were there for not being a distraction during the investigation. Citizen volunteers have been on the ground since day one searching for this little boy. And so for him to like thank them for not being a distraction, like, does strike me as a little condescending.
Yeah, for sure.
So it obviously did not sit well with people who were there. And one of the organizers, Jafari Jones, replied, quote, Y'all want to sit here and call somebody a distraction? This is a distraction. Get your hands off me, pretty boy, end quote. And I just really enjoyed that very much. And he was speaking to the officers who were escorting him out of the council meeting. And the article that I read said that he was saying this while he continued to yell expletives into his bullhorn.
Perfect.
So, like, big fan of Jafari Jones. But I do have to say that compared to the vast majority of cases we've covered, Hampton PD did a much better job searching for Cody than what we usually see. I mean, the fact that they took it seriously from the very beginning, that they involved other agencies from the very beginning, that they set up the command center, they did the grid searches, they kept on expanding outward, they really started interviewing people and figuring out where they should be focusing their search. Like, the actual search for Cody itself, I think it's really hard to find fault with how they handled that. How they handled Corey and everything else, that to me is kind of a different story. Because the treatment of Corey Bigsby leaves me with a lot of concerns. And that's kind of evidenced by this quote from Chief Talbot from that same council meeting where he said, quote, "We followed the evidence from day one. It was very clear to us the evidence about what likely occurred has been very clear. There is little about this that has been mysterious," end quote.
I mean, so if they have a quote unquote smoking gun, I just don't see where.
Right. And that's the problem, right? Because, like, we haven't seen the evidence. So maybe they do have, you know, the metaphorical smoking gun. But it's also giving me tunnel vision vibes.
Oh, yeah. 100%. You know? Yeah.
And it's hard to say, right? Corey's family definitely felt that the police were focusing on the wrong thing. Corey's sister, Tondalea Butler, whom I mentioned earlier, she spoke to reporters kind of at the beginning. She had this statement read at the council meeting, quote, "As Cody's aunt, the first real question I have is where is the support from the elected officials of the city? I have traveled hundreds of miles back and forth to make efforts to bring my nephew home with absolutely no assistance from local officials. Our hearts are heavy. I particularly am outraged. I feel that law enforcement wasted time during the most crucial hours. I need to know why there is so much focus put on the father when that energy could have been put into locating the whereabouts of Cody. It saddens me to know that the disappearance of a 4-year-old child is not as important as playing the blame game," end quote. So while I do disagree with her criticisms against the search itself, I definitely get where she's coming from on every other point, because it does seem as though they put a lot of effort into just telling people that Corey did this, right? And we've talked about this in other cases. The danger in that, if you don't have solid evidence that this is the person who is responsible, then it hurts the investigation, because if you're getting up and telling the public, well, the dad did this, if somebody saw something that day, then they're less likely to call it in, because they're going to think, well, oh, I must not have seen what I thought I saw, because, you know, the dad did it, and, like, this doesn't fit with that. And they started saying that Corey Bigsby was responsible from day one. We, of course, don't know if that negatively affected the investigation at all, but it certainly could have. The other thing about this case is that a lot of the action happened very early on. You know, in most of our episodes, all of the information that we've covered would have been over, like, a 3 or 6 month period. But in Cody's case, this all took place in about a week and a half.
I mean, that's really quick to jump to the conclusion that he did something nefarious.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that all of this has happened, like, is just amazing to me. So even so, you know, this was a very short period of time. One of the main questions people kept on asking was, where is Cody's mother? Like, we knew that she had spoken to police and had been basically cleared, but she hadn't made any public statements nor come to any of the searches or vigils, at least as far as anyone was aware. On February 10th, 11 days after her son was reported missing, she released a statement. It read, quote, "At this present time, I do not wish to take part in any telephone, television, or social media interviews. My reluctance is based on the upcoming trial, and the questions asked are questions that will be addressed in court. In addition, I have been advised by legal counsel not to address the public. However, I would like to speak to the support of the community. I sincerely appreciate all the volunteers, rescue workers, police, FBI, news reporters, the community at large, family, friends, and everyone who is showing love and support for Cody. It truly warms my heart. I'm praying for the safe return of my baby boy, Cody. I hope the public and the community understand and respect my position during this tragic time," end quote.
That's heavy.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because you get it, because she must have been bombarded by media and, you know, just random people asking her questions and wanting statements and wanting information. If she truly wasn't around and hadn't been around and had nothing she could offer the investigation, I get why she would just want to kind of not be thrust into the limelight and not talk about things that she would possibly have to talk about in a future trial, right? Because, I mean, we talk about the assault charge, which I'm sure will probably come up in the trial. There could still be some residual fear. I mean, there could be a lot of things going on. And I think a lot of people were very quick to judge her even after this statement, you know, saying that they thought it was like weird that she wasn't doing more for her son, but she was just in a tough place. Just 2 days later, though, it appeared as though there may have been a devastating discovery. Hampton police were searching an area behind the apartments where Cody was last seen. Volunteers on the scene called after they found a child's jacket size 4T on the ground near tire tracks. Though it apparently took several hours for police to arrive, when they did come, they searched and later brought in forensics and canines to assist. Now, I've read, and this part is not confirmed, because this was definitely an area that was very near the apartment and it was searched, but it was near water. And so one of the theories is that when Cody went missing, it was high tide. When the jacket was found, it was low tide. And so they think that the jacket was actually in the water and it kind of washed up when it was found. But again, that part's unconfirmed. Not sure.
So are they thinking that he might have gotten caught in the high tide?
Maybe, or maybe he was disposed of in the water, or his belongings were, or something of that nature. But again, the jacket could just be random and not related to him at all. Around the same time, two separate sets of bones were also discovered by searchers.
Human or...
Thankfully not.
Okay.
Yeah, neither turned out to be human, but like it was scary, you know, because again, like I said, I've been following this since the beginning, especially all these early searches. And I remember when the jacket was found and I remember when bones were found. And it's like every time something like this happened, there was this sense of like, okay, this is it. And, you know, it wasn't. So yeah, we know the bones, not human, not related, but the jacket, on the other hand, does remain undetermined. Then on Valentine's Day, there was another bombshell. So if you'll recall, Chief Talbot made that extremely confident statement about how Corey was like a grown man and he knew that he could ask for an attorney. And if he had, they would have given him one. So, and like Talbot got really testy because like there were people who kept on questioning him about this at different press release or at different press conferences and things. And he would get very snippy with them about it. Like he had an attitude like, we would never. How dare you? Yeah. So on Valentine's Day, he had to come out and say that was not the case, that he maybe had asked for a lawyer, which, of course, you know, given the fact that he was there for 4 days is not surprising. So in this press conference on Valentine's Day, Chief Talbot said that police, quote, mishandled Corey's right to legal counsel.
Okay, that's interesting. So now he's saying that they mishandled it.
Mm-hmm. He said that, quote, there was a heated back and forth, end quote, and that Corey twice, quote, indicated that he wanted to have legal counsel with him, end quote. His request, however, was ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And investigators questioned him for another 2.5 days without a lawyer. And then had the fucking audacity, when the lawyer showed up, to say, no, sorry, you can't come in. He never asked for you. Because a lawyer is like a vampire, you have to invite them in.
Yeah. Right.
I honestly believe that Chief Talbot did not think that the detectives were this fucking stupid. Clearly, he was wrong. So I don't think that Talbot was out there deliberately lying to everybody when he made those statements. I just think that he was really naive, and that the detectives and every officer who was involved in those interrogations 100% lied their asses off about a lot of things. So these officers really had no plausible deniability, like the ones who are actually there. I told you that after his bond was denied, Corey's lawyer requested a second bond hearing, and that was granted and scheduled for February 25th, but it was continued in order to give Ambrose time to review the video of the interrogation. So all of this is coming out. Chief Talbot's making this statement because they spent the previous weekend, the police, going through the 72 hours of video themselves.
Right. And that's when he realized, oh shit, he did actually ask for counsel.
Yeah. But at this point, Corey's lawyer still hasn't seen any of it. So all of these statements are still just coming from the police. So he got the continuance for the second bond hearing. But as it turns out, unfortunately for the defense, though, it seems as though the statements Corey made on which the neglect charges are based occurred prior to him requesting an attorney.
Oh, my God.
If that's true, and that's kind of, you know, what the prosecution has been asserting, and there was a hearing for all of this, right? And so those statements are still admissible because they occurred prior to him asking for a lawyer. In a later hearing, everything else was thrown out, but the charges stood, despite the fact that his lawyer basically described it as torture. But, you know, apparently he made these statements early on, that so it didn't matter. Yeah, so the hearing where they actually decided this happened on April 5th. And bond was also denied once again. Everything after the, you know, statements he made that the charges were based on were thrown out, and bond was denied. A week after this hearing, the rumor mill went into overdrive when Corey's lawyer, Jeff Ambrose, stepped down, saying, quote, an ethical conflict has arisen that precludes further representation, end quote.
I mean, so what does that mean?
That was what everybody was asking. So people immediately took that to mean that Corey confessed or like said something very incriminating and Ambrose had to step down because you can't knowingly put up a case that's a lie, right? Like, you know, if you know that this person committed the crime, you can't then go to court and say that he didn't.
Right.
So that is the first thing that people jump to. But Ambrose quickly shot that down, saying, quote, my withdrawal has nothing to do with any kind of confession by my client, contrary to rumor. The ethical problem compromised my duty as an attorney and his rights as a defendant, end quote. So I have no idea what the hell that means or like why he had to step down. But he did say specifically that it wasn't because Corey confessed or, you know, made an incriminating statement. Corey searched for a new lawyer, but as the summer of 22 approached, things only got worse for him. On July 6th, those seven charges he was facing, you know, the felony child neglect charges, turned into 30.
What?
Yeah. And I'm really interested in how this happened, given that most of his interrogation was thrown out. And again, none of these new charges were directly related to Cody's disappearance. So a source told WTKR that the new charges, quote, include 15 charges of child neglect for leaving the children home alone, 4 more charges of alleged child abuse, and 2 additional child neglect charges in connection to those child abuse charges. Also, 2 misdemeanor charges were added for failure to secure medical attention for an injured child.
I mean, what is all this based on?
So, to me, this can't be based on Corey's own statements, because if any of these statements that implicated him in any of these charges had been made prior to him asking for a lawyer, they would have charged him with them initially.
Right.
And everything else got thrown out. So this can't be because of him. This has to be because of other evidence, like outside witnesses, outside statements, outside proof, like things, you know, I could see it almost like financial records, right? Like financial records showing him in one place and his children not with him, or, you know,
sure,
something along those lines, maybe. The misdemeanor of failure to secure medical attention for an injured child, that could have come from, you know, the kid's mom. It could have come from another family member or somebody at a daycare, you know, just anything like that, right? So I can see, because this is the summer, this is July, so they've had half a year to talk to people and to get all the dirt, right? And so I'm thinking that's where this stuff came from. That's not to say, you know, that it's true, that it's false. We have no idea how credible any of this is, but I think that's what it is.
Right.
Instead of the 2 instances of leaving his young children home alone with which he was initially charged, the new indictment cited 7 separate occasions and said that they were left home long enough for it to be considered, quote, a reckless disregard for human life, end quote.
Ouch.
In my day, we called that the 80s, but like, yes. I'm not trying to make light of it. I just remember all the times that I was left home alone when I was like 4.
Yeah, I mean, same.
But yes, don't do that. During this court appearance, you know, for when he was indicted on these new charges, Corey's bond was also denied for a 5th time, and it was determined that he was heading to trial. So yes, like all of this looks really bad, and I honestly can't think of a plausible explanation for Cody going missing that doesn't involve his father in some way. But I'm also really concerned about prosecutorial overreach in this case. Once again, none of these charges have anything to do with Cody's disappearance, at least, you know, not directly. But if convicted, Corey could face up to 162 years in prison.
And this is just for the existing charges?
Yes. This has nothing to do with Cody's disappearance. And like, you know, you think of all of the cases that you hear in the news of like rapists and murderers like going free after short periods of time. And then this guy, you know, regardless of what you think about his role in Cody's disappearance, because he's not charged with that, they're trying to give him 162 years for this. Corey's new attorney, Amina Matheny Willard, called the indictments, quote, absolute nonsense, end quote. She released a powerful statement in defense of her client saying, quote, today, the Hampton Commonwealth's attorney announced a 30-count indictment against Corey Bigsby. The law enforcement cover-up in this case is shocking, and the result is a desperate father sitting in jail while his son is missing. Because the Commonwealth's attorney knows that Corey is innocent, he cannot indict Corey for the disappearance of Cody Bigsby because he is innocent. They locked him up, deprived him of a lawyer, and tortured him in an effort to secure a confession. They soon realized a combat veteran turned innocent father doesn't break, and he doesn't confess to a crime he didn't commit. When police realized Corey was innocent, they should have moved on to other potential suspects. Instead, law enforcement doubled down. Our criminal justice system's history is littered with cases like this, where the ends justify the means to arrogant police and prosecutors. As we see in case after case where corrupt police were able to obtain forced confession, the state was wrong. The Commonwealth is likewise wrong here, and in this case, Corey Bigsby withstood their torture techniques and refused to confess to a crime he didn't commit. Today's indictments carry one clear message. Corey Bigsby had nothing to do with Cody's disappearance, and the Commonwealth's failure to make a case is an admission to this fact. The indictments at hand are absolute nonsense. The allegations against Corey could be made against any busy and struggling parent, as it seems the Commonwealth's attorney must be reminded that not everyone has a disposable income with which to hire daycare or an au pair. The Commonwealth is desperate to convict Corey of something, anything, because they know that Mr. Bigsby will be filing complex federal litigation against the city to hold them accountable for their horrific conduct in this case. This case is not a prosecution. It's a modern-day lynching. Mr. Bigsby looks forward to his day in court. End quote. Like, that's a fucking statement.
Right?
Like, again, whatever you believe about Corey's guilt or innocence, that's a damn good lawyer. Amina Matheny Willard is her name, by the way.
In case I need it.
I'm just saying, like, I just want everybody to know, like, it's really interesting because we don't know what evidence the police supposedly have. And yes, common sense does say that he's involved in his son's disappearance, but the way that police and prosecutors have handled this in terms of Corey does seem insane to me.
I mean, you're absolutely right. They didn't look at anybody else. Just went straight for him.
And went for him hard. Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, we talked about, again, Oakley Carlson. We talked about, like, Jordan Bowers. And I even made light of the fact that she was released from jail and then was immediately rearrested on identity theft charges, because I do think that that's, like, kind of funny. But this is not that. They kept them in jail so they can build a case. And, you know, they were charges. They were legitimate, whatever. And I'm not saying that these are not legitimate charges, but we're talking 162 years and we're talking 4 days of an unconstitutional interrogation in which he did not confess to anything. So I very much get where she's coming from. And yes, like, her job is to defend Corey Bigsby zealously, and she's definitely doing that. And I'm not saying that she's right, but when it got to the point where she said Commonwealth's attorney must be reminded that not everyone has a disposable income with which to hire daycare or an au pair, like, that made me think of the woman who was arrested and thrown in jail for leaving her child in the car while she went in for a job interview.
Yes.
Right. And it's like, these people who are struggling, who can't afford childcare, you know, are just doing what they have to do to survive. And yeah, in a perfect world, that's not what they would choose. And it's not what they should choose, but it's what life necessitated for them. And again, this is not me coming here defending Corey Bigsby, because I don't believe that he's necessarily innocent, but I don't believe that he's necessarily guilty either. Like, I don't have a good sense of his guilt or innocence like I do in some of the other cases.
Well, yeah, it's hard to make a judgment on something like this when the information that's being released is so limited.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so yeah, you have this police department that admits that they fucked up with his interrogation, but then it's cumbersome on when he actually asked for counsel and all this other stuff. But I mean, they're really tight-lipped about all this. So we have no idea what he said during the interrogation.
Yes, exactly. And it makes sense that they're tight-lipped about it. And that's good for their case, for, sure. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is hard, right? Like, it's just, it's a difficult situation. So shortly after this indictment, Corey's family spoke out and said that Corey wasn't the villain he was being made out to be by the police and the media, and compared the Hampton Police Department's treatment of him to kidnapping, which 4 days, like,
yeah.
I have a hard time arguing with that characterization. Is, yeah. Yeah. They also announced a $25,000 reward for information leading to Cody's whereabouts. Meanwhile, the Hampton community continued to rally around Cody and search for the little boy. Khalil Cribbs, president of United We Stand of Hampton, told reporters, quote, "We're going to continue on searching until the community finds answers, until we find answers, until we know what's going on with this child," end quote. Corey Bigsby's trial was slated to start on November 7th, 2022. However, it was continued so Corey could receive a mental evaluation. That evaluation determined that Bigsby was competent to stand trial. However, a second evaluation was ordered. Bigsby is due back in court for a pretrial hearing on March 31st, 2023, and another bond appeal on April 5th, 2023. Cody Bigsby has yet to be found. Cody Bigsby has been missing from Hampton, Virginia since January 31st, 2022. He is a black male with brown hair and brown eyes. At the time of his disappearance, he was approximately 3 feet tall and 60 pounds. He was 4 years old when he went missing. He would be five today. If you know anything about Cody or Corey Bigsby's whereabouts between December 25th, 2021 and today, you're asked to call the crime line at 1-888-LOCK-YOU-UP, the letter U, which is 1-888-562-5887, or submit a tip online at P as in Paul, 3, the number 3, tips.com, p3tips.com, or via the P3Tips app. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Conan Gallagher and Ethan Flick. Our research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.